This is football. I am Kevin Clark. Jordan Rovig joins in just 1 second. She wrote an awesome piece about the Rams. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to find out what she learned about football through these scouts' eyes that she was just embedded with the Rams over the past year or so. A lot of detail here, including some interesting stuff on the process of selecting these players in the 2024 draft. Some interesting stuff on Jared Verse, on Brandon Fisk, on Puka Nacua. Even if you are not a Rams fan, you will learn a lot about football over the next 40 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, Jordan Rovig.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Feeling like you need a marketing degree and an extra day in your week to successfully market your small business? Let Constant Contact do the heavy lifting for you. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has powerful tools that make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more to boost your business. Now, in just a few clicks, you can launch a marketing campaign that's tailored to your business and goals. That includes email, social, SMS, and more. So you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track your business growth. Plus, you can always count on Constant Contact's award-winning customer support for guidance along the way. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
All right, Jordan Rovig, she covers NFL projects and the Los Angeles Rams. She combined both of those things in a groundbreaking two-part series last week called Finding Rams on The Athletic. What is going on, pal?
Nice to see you, buddy. How are you?
I'm so fired up. It is the doldrums of NFL, and everybody's always
We just had
Jordan Reed do a 2025 mock draft, but being next week we'll do a 2026 mock draft, 2027 mock draft. I don't know if I ever told you the story. I was talking to a Rams source of mine at the beginning, right before the national championship game between Georgia and Alabama. This was 2-3 years ago. And I remember, and I literally said to them, I was like, you know, you guys don't need to watch a college game because you don't have any first round picks. And they said, they were so excited. They were like, there are players on that field we will one day be able to draft. And now we're here. They finally have a first round pick. It's a new world, Jordan.
I know. I was like, oh, Thursday is not just a party day at the Rams draft house. This is actually going to be a work day. It was interesting, you know, halfway through this project, which I know we'll get into, like I started having like deep fear and like anxiety dreams about all of this work that was getting put in. And then I wake up one day and Les Snead has traded away number 19 for something. Yep. And then the project is like moot at this point. So purely selfish reasons, but yes, it was cool to finally cover a first rounder.
Trading away like a highly anticipated pick is the most alpha move. I remember Belichick traded out of a pick that was going to be used to honor the like Boston Marathon first responders. Remember that whole thing? They had a pick and they were going to have them all out there. And then the Patriots are like, yeah, we're going to trade out of it. We're good. And then it ended up being like, you know, the Chiefs pick or something. What I was going to say, I was going to finish my thought though, is everybody's always like NFL 24/7, 365, no days off, always news every day. Nope. This is it. This is it. May, June, July. No. I meant like when I said the doldrums, it's like May 7th. And so the point I was going to make was that I'm so glad you dropped this in because it is literally going to be the only newsworthy content of the month of May. Literally, unless someone gets arrested.
Hopefully everyone
dropped
stays
a
safe.
Little bomb into the news cycle.
Everyone stay safe. Everyone stay hydrated. You know,
NFL just players do not listen to this show. So you're just talking to a bunch of Madden YouTubers. All right. So, which by the way, hydrate, guys, fellas, hydrate. So what you did was you embedded with the Rams scouts, who had the easiest job in the world for a while because they just didn't use a lot of their picks. I will say this. People, I think, misunderstood the Rams project. They hit on guys. First of all, the reason you're able to have the picks for veterans strategies because you hit on picks a decade ago. Aaron Donald, players like that. And offensive linemen, or if free agency hits, and then you were able to augment that with genuine superstars. And then you have to hit on third, fourth, fifth round picks, late round, seventh picks, second round picks, undrafted free agents, understand the culture there, and then I'll scheme it up. So I think that people, the FM picks thing was always, it was very funny. I like to make those jokes. We all like to make those jokes, but it wasn't necessarily the most honest thing in the world. We'll start here before we get into any of this stuff. The FM picks history was what? Like, when was the moment they made the decision to pursue that? Why didn't Sean McVay have a first round pick before this? Like, what was the actual philosophy behind it?
Yeah, I would say 2019 was when they, to backtrack a little bit further, when Sean McVay came in, and I covered this on the Play Callers narrative series from last year, they were way better than they thought they would be, way faster than they thought they would be. And the rate and the pace at which they were able to, at that time, schematically catch the league a little bit off guard. And then, you know, Bill Belichick enters the chat, and then again, resetting and reconfiguring, you know, they realized that they could actually make a bit of a run versus doing one of these slower rebuilds because they did have such an advantage. They still had Aaron Donald on this team, and Sean comes in, the emergence of Cooper Kupp and the partnership with Robert Woods at that time. It just worked. And so they started really leaning into this picks for players ethos. I want to say around 2019, the Jalen Ramsey trade really, I think, was a huge, hey guys, we are here doing it this way now sort of banner that they cast. And then they continued to lean into that as they continued to climb into those tiers of contention. I talk about this a lot, but what a lot of people on the outside don't realizes it's not just like, are you a playoff team or are you not a playoff team? Mm-hmm. There are actual tiers into contention once you become a playoff team. And so getting past those certain tiers in their minds in that contention phase, that led to the trades, the FM picks era, as we know, which again was very tongue in cheek and in that way, because they care a lot about their picks because the volume drafting in the middle rounds was what supported the bulk of their top heavy roster for some time, including through into the Super Bowl win. So you saw that era. And then obviously you saw what happened in 22, just like a collapse of epic proportion, injury riddled and lots of things in their control and out of their control. And then they sort of entered a new phase in 2023, which I called a sprint rebuild, which was you really have to nail the draft. I don't think anybody expected them to have as great a productive draft as they actually did, but they knew that this was going to be a volume draft. They knew that they had to hit on a couple players, and those players had to play right away. So we're seeing now the entrance and the shift into a different type of build. What's been cool is they've been pretty like out loud with their style of build over the last couple of years. And these are two different builds, but at a certain point in this process, they will start to look the same. It just will depend on where the contracts are at and what level or what tier of contention they believe they're in.
So there's a bunch of interesting stuff in this two-part series. I want to start here. You talked about the unwritten rules of being a scout. A couple of them. First of all, scouts' lives are so insane.
And let's talk about the eating habits.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, or even like a little line here, don't visit your alma mater's rival during rivalry game weeks. I've thought about that because obviously I like certain teams more than others, and I dislike certain teams more than others in the college game. NFL, I don't care about. But sometimes competitively, like you'll have to call a rival and you'll have to say, hey, I need to talk to this guy, or I need to talk to this coach, or I need to talk to the position coach. And literally I will almost do the same thing where I'm just like, hey, like there's only a month until hypothetical school plays hypothetical school. I'm going to get this out of the way early so we can, you know, we can just get that done. I won't, you know, cause you have different relationships, all that stuff. I'll put it there. But even like the smallest thing, remember Daniel Jeremiah saying this, and this is a trick that I picked up as well being on my camp tour, only use the bathroom in like Courtyard by Marriott hotels. Like that, because it's always available. There's a million of them.
The lobby. Yeah.
Or they'll always, just say, hey, I'm a platinum member. I'm an ambassador member. No big deal. And hey, I'm just going to grab a coffee and go and put my stuff down. And I'm also going to go to the bathroom. It's the easiest thing in the world. Scouts know all of those tricks.
Yes. Every single trick. There was even like, and obviously some identifiers could not be used for this story for, you know, confidentiality purposes.
Sure, of course.
And also the draft is really competitive. But there were certain things like, hey, while you're driving to this school on this highway, like here are three restaurants to eat at yep. that do a deal on this day. And then this one has a clean bathroom. And then here, you know, it's just all kinds of things. But this, it's this huge roadmap of little tips and tricks that have accumulated over time. And then there's this shared, not to sound dramatic, but it's a little bit of a trauma bonding situation where all of these guys, like, they've known each other for so long. And especially the old timers, like, they've been in this for so long at this point, and they know all the same people, and they keep what I loved is learning that they keep notes on the pro liaisons at schools, mm-hmm. that they keep like a full document of how helpful that person is and whether the information is good and what they're like as a person and what the process is like. I just, all of those little behind the scenes nuances, I mean, it just lit me up being able to see all of it and to get to, like, be there and on that schedule too. I mean, you know, it's not surprising after being on that schedule for 10 months that they eat the way that they do, but the apple cider vinegar really helps. I think it's all about balance. Agree. It evens everything out.
There was a theory that the reason Greg Schiano had so much built up negativity going into his NFL career, which was very short and unproductive, was because he was such a bully to NFL teams when they came to scouts that people in the league just really hated him.
That's so interesting. I got to tell you, the notebook is full of stories that weren't used or that couldn't be used about different people who have come up and come down throughout the college ranks, different experiences with colleges. It was really fascinating. It is a personality profile for every place that these guys visit. And when they're all around each other, this is their shared thing that they have mm-hmm. in common. It's like, hi, how's your family? You know, how's the wife? How are the kids? Are they in college yet? Also, holy cow, let's talk about this place, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. and let's talk about our various, you know, journeys and all of that. And I loved that because that to me was very slice of life. It's something that I won't forget because, you know, it leads to a lot of other threads and tidbits and things like that. But also it was just really cool and fascinating. And just to hear how people are around each other in that space. I don't think people realize how isolating that job can be. And so, of course, they find this shared experience with each other and compare notes. And that part is really interesting.
Is there anything, before we get into the nitty gritty of the Rams and how they were built and kind of the internal makeup there, talking to this many scouts, is there anything you learned about just broadly the game of football that changed your mind on anything or something you look for now because you're like, hey, this, you don't need to give me a name, but you're just like, I watch football differently because of this. Like, just any info that you gleaned about how to watch the game through a scout's eyes.
I mean, I do watch football differently now after this experience, but I think too, and we'll get to it, is the reframing of a specific language that a place uses. Every place has its own way of talking about their process. And I know that sounds like a bit galaxy brain, you know, but seriously, it is something that is very unique to them. It's like their fingerprints within a space. But if you have continuity on a staff, such as like the Rams do for 10 years at this point on that scouting staff, they all have evolved this language where it's, you know, shapes and colors and code words and different things that all equate to thousands and thousands of words. And over time, I started understanding it more naturally and understanding it more normally to where now, you know, if I'm watching tape or something, then I'll think of different badges or different things, different color gradients, things like that, that have been directly applicable to my, you know, learning about what this language has been. And it freaks me out a little bit because it's like, I'm just basically was listening for almost a year, right? And then having absorbed that much, what was one of the coolest things that I did get to experience was shadowing Taylor Morton and Mike Young and Andy Sugarman at the Senior Bowl and learning, eavesdropping, but learning from their conversations with college head coaches and assistant coaches about various players and what specifically was important to them and what specifically mattered to them, how they would go about just basically transforming into active listening devices as people and absorbing every little tidbit. I loved watching O-linemen with Taylor Morton because he helped me understand, you know, how to look and study that position. Obviously, I'm not a professional at that, but how to study the position piece by piece and what to absorb first. And when I go back later and I'm watching cut-ups with all of them and everything, what I'm looking for first, different just just better at watching film, I think, than I ever was. And that's going to be really helpful to me and to my future. But just breaking things down into little pieces and looking for patterns and details and tells and things that sometimes out on the outside we think are a really big deal, but don't actually end up being a huge deal on the inside. I think the coolest thing I heard, this was not from the Rams, but one of the coolest things that I heard in Mobile was everybody was talking about like what badasses the Washington offensive linemen were because they don't play with knee braces. And that was like a message that they were sending, you know, to the broader community, like, yeah, we can handle this kind of a thing. And then who's in gloves and who's not. And it's not like that's a huge make or break detail in the scouting process. It's a million details all packaged together in one picture, but just the little kind of gossipy, you know, the things that people liked to talk about, less so proprietary information they were sharing with others.
Mouthpieces, whether they're in or out, massive thing. I remember, I think it was against North Carolina 2 years ago. I had pretty good seats, and I think Tyreek Stevenson took a rep with his mouthpiece like in his hand, and I was like, "This is an NFL player. This is an NFL player. I don't know what he's doing, but I just promise you, if a DB is doing something other than having a mouthpiece in his mouth, he's a good player." I have a question about the way the Rams go about this, because it's a broader question for the league. So they don't go to the combine really, unless there's a specific task for a specific employee. And they don't do official 30 visits because those are documented by the league and they don't want anyone to know what they're thinking. Obviously, the official 30 visits, it's a little different if you're not picking in the first round, but this year they are. Is this a matter of them just being like, all right, almost from so most teams look at it and say, this is what we've always done it. The Rams probably look at it the opposite way and say, why are we doing this? We don't always do things. Is it just a matter of that? Is there a reason why they don't do those two things that are just more about their philosophy?
Well, the medical at the combine is what they're really there for. That's why the combine actually, you know, is important in terms of, you know, I'm not talking about the production side and the hundreds of people who have like, you know, make a living help to do that and put that on. It's a great event every year. But in terms of their perspective, they only care about the medical. The medical is really interesting because that's where all the NFL teams sort of convene and assess prospects by position over the course of several days. And you're all sharing the same information in a major data pool. And once you break it down within your own like risk assessments and the way that you internally and whatever tools sports science you have to break down some of those medical characteristics and how you weigh those risks or non-risks in your traits assessment and your overall prospect analysis, that's where they start to differentiate from each other as teams. But that was really, it doesn't crystallize for you until you kind of go through that process where you're realizing, oh yeah, this is actually how it works and this is why this is important. So that's why they go to the combine. They don't find the breakout interviews very helpful. You know, they find that prospects have often been like heavily prepped by that time, and that's the agent's job. They're supposed to do that. That's a part of it. But they find that, you know, that's just not necessarily an efficient use of their time when they are sending specific people, Andy Sugarman being one of them, out on the road to do basically day-long study sessions with prospects in their hometowns, in a place where the prospect does feel comfortable at their college. And I'll get to that in a minute. But the interesting thing about the combine process too is they just found that if they have a personality test, it's a version of a Hexaco test that has existed for a while, but their own internally created version of that. And they basically get those done at the All-Star events during the interview portions, whether it's East-West Shrine Bowl, it is the Senior Bowl, during those 10 to 15 minute four at a time interviews as people roll through. And they just didn't feel like they were getting like a real sense of who the prospects were. They've been doing this for a long time. They've stopped attending the combine in full since 2021, when some of the restrictions lifted, and in 2020, even only Sean and Les only went for a day and then they left. And during this time at Rams, Sean McVay ends up kind of incubating with his assistant coaches at that time. They do a bunch of scheme work during that time. And that's something that they find more valuable on the coaching side than going to sit with a bunch of prospects because of what happens next, which is they send Andy Sugarman and a couple others out on the road to do these super deep dives with prospects who they think they might draft. And that's why it's important that they fly under the radar, because regardless of the round, if you're sitting down with Andy Sugarman, there is something the team needs to know more about you. And he sits down with them and they go through a bunch of different types of film study and film breakdown. And they go through that prospect's own scheme and an offense or defense. And then he kind of gives them a couple of, you know, Rams things. He asks for some recall with Senior Bowl or All-Star if they went and they participated in those practices. And they just sort of interact in that player's environment versus an environment that is not necessarily totally football, more of a job interview process. They want to see what football players are like when they're doing football. And so I think that's what those, and it doesn't take away the importance of the event. Like the tape from the Senior Bowl is something they hugely prioritize and break mm-hmm. down in a hyper efficient way to be able to study massive amounts of it in a short amount of time. And they often pick Senior Bowl players. Like if you look at their draft classes, it's so funny. They, you know, one thing that I ran into was I would see colleagues, you know, out on the road and they'd be like, what the heck are you doing here? Like the Rams don't come to this. And I'm like, oh, nothing, just, you know, lurking around and it's the outside perception is that they don't care about this stuff. It's right. massively important, but the way that they've decided to identify what matters to them in terms of these prospects, inclusive to keeping some of that stuff under the radar with the way that they go about their visits. And they've done that for a couple of years now. That's not a new thing. I think it is the first time they've talked about it, but that's not new in terms of how they've operated with their process. So it is all kind of a combination of strategy and then fact-finding in a way that feels valuable to them. Not so much worrying about kind of like what is done or not done.
The Hexaco test was developed by the person who was responsible for my career, if I'm not mistaken.
I know. Right? I thought of you. I was like, I think I texted you at some point over the last couple of months. And I was like, Kevin, in 2 months, I'll be able to tell you a Sam Walker story. Yeah.
Sam Walker was the sports editor at the Wall Street Journal. And he gave me my first byline nationally when I was just a local reporter in Miami. And the story I'll tell, I don't think I've ever told the story publicly, is he called me when I was a junior in college and he was like, do you want to, because I had been writing for him as a junior. And I don't think I ever told him I was a college kid when I was writing for him. I wasn't catfishing him, but I wasn't not catfishing him.
You were sort of catfishing him. Yeah.
But I was also working for a newspaper down in South Florida and I started.
Was it the school paper?
No, I wasn't that bad of a catfish. No, I had professional clips. I was being paid for my work. I just started a little early. So he offers me a job. I think I may have still been a junior in college. And I said, hey, Sam, like, I got to be totally honest with you. I don't have my college degree. Like, I don't know if I could do this. And the phone goes silent. And he just goes, well, let's not create obstacles here. Like, let's just not tell anybody. And I was like, oh, okay.
That's so
fine.
Sam. Oh my God.
And I was like,
that's
okay. And then it ended up being when the as all HR things do, it took forever and I was able to at least get enough credits to graduate. But now that gentleman is in charge of leadership at the Rams and it works. He just, all he does is just jam talent through, even if they don't have their, probably doesn't even have to ask for a college degree. Probably maybe they value college degrees at the Rams more than they do at the Wall Street Journal.
Well, their prospects are all like 24 years old. So
yeah, they're all doctors.
They're PhD. Yeah, they're all old prospects. But yeah, it is interesting. And I wouldn't say, you know, it's a combination of a lot of different things. Like that became very clear to me, because I think it's easy to firefly toward one piece of this or another piece or another, because genuinely, it's a cool look behind the scenes of like what actually happens and how this stuff works. But it was so clear to me. And again, watching and seeing their giant boards and screens of their JARS program that basically houses an entire language and has for the last 10 years, like how everything evolves and it shifts so much. And as little pieces of the puzzle are added, they are just that, little pieces of the puzzle. And even down to prospects, you know, they're characterized as gradients of colors that and shapes that mean certain different things in the Rams scouting and evaluation language. And it's never standing still. It's always moving. It's constantly moving. And I thought that was what was so cool is they don't treat it as a, this or that kind of process, everything is always malleable and taking shape, including the way that Les Snead maneuvers around his call sheet, which actually was funny. It looks a lot like the Sean McVay play call sheet. So those guys were made for each other, I guess. And so it just, the way that everything moves around it constantly through the entire process, and no one thing is a defining thing for any one person. And if it is, that's often actually, if you get stuck on something, or you do go if then on somebody, you can actually see in history, like, where they've missed, and you can see, you know, you can pinpoint, and they do processes through Nicole Blake and Jake Temme, their two analysts, like, they do processes on, like, where the tides turn for prospects through, you know, vocal cues and different conversation spikes and different surveys that they run throughout the course of the draft year. They can pinpoint, like, okay, this is when a coach, like, would not leave the idea of this prospect alone. Or this is when the axiom, like, oh, he fell in love with the prospect or stood on the table for a prospect. Like, this is when it really happened and why. And can we correct it before we are stuck and cemented in making a choice? And sometimes it comes down to, we were unlucky. Nobody we liked is here. We either trade back. We can't trade back. Okay, we're picking here. Or opposite, got super lucky with the way the board fell for Jared Verse, who was their top outside linebacker. And that's how it fell. And so then they got really lucky and they were able to get him at 19. So it just, so much of it, it's the futility of it all. Like, Les said something to me last year when I was interviewing him for Play Callers, basically was like, we're all doomed. So just go and try your hardest, like, make the most of it. And so it was so crystallizing for me as I started this process, where it was like, there's so much futility to this, to the point where it is, so much of it does come down to uncontrollable luck. And you just hope you don't make any, you know, self-inflicted errors or anything along the way, or that you're not incorrect in your process. And you can really pinpoint when people are incorrect in their process. And then it's just so interesting how much comes down to that total futility and calendar refresh, to the point where I'm standing with a bunch of scouts on Saturday afternoon and everyone's phones ding at the same time. And it's the email of 2025 prospects. And I was like, well, I'm out. This is where I can't do this anymore.
That's where Jordan Reed comes in. Thank God he's here on this, this week's on This Is Football. As Jordan Reed slides right in as Jordan flies out. More with Jordan after this.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537, or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net, Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP, Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700, Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050. Or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, two things for you. I'll start here. This is the big one. So you talk a little bit about how Verse and Fisk, they identified some chemistry there, which I totally agree with. I watched a lot of Florida State football last year, and I've said this 50 times on 50 different shows. It just kind of happens this time of year. But it felt like Verse and Fisk, and I don't know if they said this when you were talking to them, but it felt like Verse and Fisk took Jordan Travis's injury personally, looked around and said, that offense is not going to score any points. Like we have to actually just get in the backfield consistently and thoroughly. Like that's, that's the one thing. I don't think that they would have been particularly good in the playoffs with Tate Rodemaker at quarterback. But I also think that Fisk and Verse understood the stakes, and we never, people talk about with Aaron Donald, but like no one ever talks about winning defensive ends. No one talks about winning defensive tackles. They don't talk about winning quarterbacks. It felt like Verse and Fisk knew how to win, and they knew how to set up those moves and always be in the backfield on huge money downs and all that stuff. But that's an aside. Take me through the process that led to this draft class, including Verse, Fisk, and then Cam Kitchens in the third round.
Yeah, well, I knew you were going to ask me about the Florida people, first of all. You are very on brand, including the jacket. Very nice jacket, by the way.
Thanks,
always
pal.
Always got to compliment the jacket when I'm on with you. Okay, so this was really interesting. And so coaches start getting involved in this prospect, or in this process. I want to say like late February and starting into March. Basically, they have to get through all their pro scouting stuff first with free agency. They also use JARS for this process. They track prospects even if they don't draft them, so that they have, you know, databases accumulated on some of that stuff. So they're going in through this process, and around in early April, they started having these meetings with the area scouts, the coaches, and the senior scouts or OTT scouts and the two analysts. And they started doing this exercise where they were podding players together. And this was, Aaron Donald has retired. Let's take the phrase that is the cliche, which is you can't replace Aaron Donald with one player. Mm-hmm. Let's do a thought exercise where we assign it literally into some of our meetings and some of our surveys that we do. So what they were doing was they started to pod together different tiers of defensive linemen and outside linebackers. And they were kind of arguing for and against different combinations. And they started associating different players in tandem and then running through different scenarios. If he's taken here, when could we get him? If he's not taken and he falls, could we trade and then get him? With all of these tandems and these pods that they were kind of trying to create. Well, it kept coming up over and over and over and over and over again, as clear as day on tape, but then also through debate and things like that, that Jared Verse and Braden Fisk had this unique type of chemistry that would be worth investing in, not just because you're literally needing to immediately reimagine and reassign like what your identity is on your defensive line, but also you're saving a year of development of two strangers having to understand how to pass rush off each other if you're investing in that pass rush that's already a known quantity. So we've talked about this before, Kevin, the idea of the Rams investing and paying more for known quantities versus unknown quantities or entities. And I think that this was a very clear example of that thought process, because they did overpay to trade up for Braden Fisk. And structurally, you look at charts and sheets. Every team has their own, by the way. They're not looking at the ones on the internet. But at the same time, like, this wasn't, I mean, objectively, this was an overpay, but they were paying for, they were spending that much in for the trade in order to specifically pair those two players together. But like I said before, that doesn't actually happen if they don't get lucky with Jared Verse falling to them, because it wasn't going to be like, it wasn't likely to be one or the other. It was, you're paying for this unique chemistry, and this is in terms of your tiers, like this is your top outside linebacker. You're also seeing who is the best rushing partner with your top outside linebacker. Okay, here are other outside linebackers on your list. Here are your top defense interior defensive linemen. Who are the best rushing partners, and what are some exercises to where you can potentially pair those together? If they were going to go outside linebacker in this draft, and there was a chance that they didn't, but if they were going to go outside linebacker or interior defensive lineman, there was an exponentially greater chance that they would try to work out one of these pairings that they discussed in April. And I thought it was really interesting because, again, it was taking some like a cliche and like turning it into a tangible thought exercise and then acting upon that. And then the luck factor that comes into it is it actually worked. Still have to get them on the field and see, but that was specifically what they were investing in and what their process was.
And then the Miami guy in the third round, just to humble.
Oh, I love that pick. You know me though. I was the one who wrote the Jordan Fuller story back in, you know, sixth round pick. Brad Holmes said, toss out the 40 time. Like, let's use GPS data like that. I loved that. So this was, I was like, oh yeah, this is he's a Ram, you know, like he's a Ram. And I think he could potentially be an impact player, but it's the same process. It's how does this football guy do football things? And you really can't argue with how Cam Kitchens does football things, even if he tests, you know, maybe a more average or poorly.
Great ball instincts. Tape wasn't amazing last year. I think he was hurt.
Like, and honestly, like that's where some of the area scout sourcing and some of the things come into play, because they're looking at so much more than what we're seeing on Saturdays or on Sundays. They're looking at a lot of different things that they have access to because over a long period of time, the relationships they do build up with those schools, that those, especially those area scouts and the OTT scouts that have been doing this for so long, part of this entire process is source building. It actually felt very similar to what we do, in terms of building sourcing everywhere you go to build a picture and just filling in different pieces and shapes of that picture. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is because I mail it in, but you do lots of sourcing. last thing for you. So, you get a little bit into the Cooper Kupp selection, obviously what went into that, but also the Puka Nacua thing. Puka Nacua completely, you mentioned Cam Kitchens and kind of how he's a Ram. Puka Nacua, same deal. They figured out, I mean, like, he ran the gauntlet better than anybody, which Keon Coleman did actually this year, not to make this a Forest Tape podcast, but like the gauntlet is a measurement of how fast you move playing football. And it's not a 40, it's not a short shuttle, it's not the three cone. That stuff can help measure pure speed, but like how fast you move playing football. Les Snead has been completely, I've been talking to Les Snead for 13 years, and I think in all 13, he's been talking about the Holy Grail being conceptualizing and contextualizing GPS because you're playing football. Mm-hmm. What do you get? I remember talking to him. What do you get when you can put velocity on the football? And what does that mean? What can you put into the model? Like, we've got data points there that are not just you're smiling because you probably have the same exact conversations with him. But for me, it's like there's just so many different data points, and there's kind of an arms race to figure out what it means, frankly, because you're getting so much data. You know, I'll look every Sunday at the next gen stats and say and see so-and-so has the most separation. Does that matter? Is that just defense? Like, what actually does, like, I remember like 3 years ago when Daniel Jones had like the fastest run of the season. And it's like, I know Daniel Jones isn't the fastest guy. He just happened to get 60 yards ahead of him. Yeah. Like, what matters and what doesn't is the question. And so you have someone like Les Snead who wants to ask those questions and answer them. You have someone like Sean McVay who knows ball to an unbelievable degree and can help you understand that. You have the scouts who are there. Like, it just feels like the Rams are doing a good job of figuring out what matters and what doesn't. All this to say, can you explain in that context how the Puka Nacua selection happened?
Big question. Love the question though. And also I do want to say, like, this story never argues that they're better or worse at this because it does spend,
they've
so
never
much
done
time.
It before, because they've never had a first round pick before.
But like the draft in general, it doesn't argue whether they're better or worse or whether their process is better or worse. It just is. And that's one of the big takeaways here is, like, every team, and I heard from so many people around the league, like throughout the course and then after this, where it was like, you know, every building has to have their own process. You can't get like wandering eyes and like firefly over to what something works in one building and then apply it to your own. There's so many different things that come into play. And we're talking about GPS. And one huge thing that was very clear and made very clear to me this year is that if you have a coach who understands the why of his scheme at the level that Sean and then, you know, several other coaches across the league, but in this example, Sean does, he can literally communicate to in the, and there's continuity enough to translate that communication with their analytics staff and with Les and his staff to say, this is how deep, you know, this is how deep my receiver is going to run X, this particular route. This is the time, the exact time I need him to get there. This is how many steps in the drop the quarterback will have taken. This is the spacing he's going to come out of the cut and cut split and then into the actual space on the field. This is the wiggle room that we have in terms of making this play go yes or no. These are the other concepts that are unfolding that also require this certain timing. Matching that to GPS data is actually the next step of why this works. If you can communicate to that level of granularity as a coach, this is why Puka Nacua fits in our offense. And like to the point where I was like in the story, I said they stamped a bunch of maroon hots on Puka, the coaching staff did. The scouts loved his tape, but they were like, you know, the injury history and they were weighing in the medicals and things like that. And they love, you know, the area scout Vito Ganeo was like raving about him, but at the same time, the injury flags, it was like the risk grade is like, okay, if you're going to spend a high round pick on a prospect who you really feel like can work, you have to really have a deeper understanding of that medical and projections. And those things are very hard to guess on. So in terms of the early round picks, so it's like, can the other variables that this prospect that will maybe be less attractive to other teams typically, because they also are scouting tendencies of other teams and what they value and don't value in prospects. Can we wait? How long can we wait? What is the riskiest yet safest bet we can make on this prospect where it will still be luck involved, but it's informed by data and by tendency scouting of other teams throughout the volume parts of the draft, the third, fourth, fifth rounds. So that all goes into it. And the story explains all of that. But like I said, if you don't have a coach and a GM who understand each other's language to the point where you can take Sean saying, like drawing on tape with the little squiggly yellow thing, the yellow marker thing, like, this is the time I need him here. This is the time I need this player here. This is what the quarterback will be doing at this time. This is what every other player will be. This is how the timing of this play down to the millisecond has to work in order for this play to work. And here's our window of wiggle room. And here's our other options in case it doesn't work. Well, you can basically quantify that into prospect evaluation if the coach can communicate to the staff exactly what it is and why he needs it. And then now we have the technology via GPS and the tests that are, I think, better than other tests, like the gauntlet, for example, to actually turn that type of projection and just bring more data into quantifying like whether it could work or not. And so it was really important that the coaches came into the process on guys like Puka and many more, because they're looking at not just traits and, you know, flags or not flags or risks or background. They're not looking at all of that intel. They're looking at schematic matching, and especially the way that they go through that incubator, because they're not going to the combine. They all are of the same understanding under Sean what that language is by the time they get to their prospect evaluation, because they're not going to the combine and traveling for a week and doing those interviews. They're spending that week doing this other stuff. And so then you send Andy Sugarman, who just gets Puka like added to his schedule mid-trip, right, to go get on the board with him. And it basically validates all of the things, the other things they needed to know about Puka to see whether he would also understand that language and specifically the why of what coaches wanted to communicate with him and whether he could apply that tangibly to the field. And that's what they believed. And it's not that other teams didn't like Puka. It's not, you know, he was very like under the radar as a prospect. We know this. And the Rams even themselves are like, yeah, like we would definitely pick him earlier knowing what we know now. And, but at the same time, the story goes through some of the informed betting that they did. And Les cites Annie Duke a lot. So he calls them informed bets, but it's this type of strategy where, you know, you understand that everybody's volume picking in these rounds. What little edges or advantages can you manufacture in those rounds, playing certain tendencies or known bodies of tendencies that the data analysts are scouting out basically and quantifying? How can you play those things off of each other. But then also it's like, luck. Someone could have picked Puka before them. Sean mm-hmm. would have lost his freaking mind. He was like, the way that they talk about like how anxious he was during that fifth round last year was really funny. But like they could have fully missed on the pick. An injury could have happened. Anything. Cooper Kupp could have been healthy to start the season, and then Puka's not getting on the field so much. So the futility of it all, even with all the strategy, I loved like the chaotic doom and darkness that also melded with like pure football nerd, like, and like just the strategy and the expansive thinking about all of this. But there's like so much doom in it too.
I can't believe you'd write two parts just about how the Rams are better than everybody at drafting. I can't believe you'd say
shut
that
up.
Specifically. Jordan, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you so much. I learned a lot.
Thanks, Kevin, for having me.